Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 49 of Digital Divination. Ron, we're so close.
We're going to roll right through 50. We'll be happy at 100. We're going to roll right through 50 like it's nothing.
All right, 50 is nothing. Nothing special. Won't do anything to celebrate. Not even a milestone.
We are though, now at more episodes than I am old. So I am 48, and this is episode 49.
Oh, so okay. I didn't realize you were so young.
I am the spring chicken in a lot of the groups I'm in these days.
Oh, well, we get a couple more episodes to get older than me then. I'll have to
wait. We'll get there. We'll celebrate that when it happens.
All right. We have something to celebrate today, though.
Yes?
I hear that somebody had their first Kickstarter get fully funded today.
I did. It's been 1 week. This is actually a weird situation. It's the Scaldwood Blight Adventure Path. It is a full Pathfinder 2nd Edition Adventure Path that takes you from first to 20th level. And I'm excited that people are excited about the Kickstarter, that they want to pay money for it, but it's already kind of free. This was 2 years ago. No, I'm happy to say it. 2 years ago, I sort of had that exercise on my blog over the course of almost an entire year about here's how you put a whole adventure path together. And there is a lot of additional stuff in the final product. There's art, there's maps. We've got full stat blocks. The thing is blown out to about 250 pages after the expansions that, that I put into it. And our stretch goals are going to make that probably tip over even a little bit more. Ooh. But it's fantastic. I've been working with Owen Casey Stevens on it throughout, in putting together the blog, everything I did with it after that, he's helped me out on, some map resources, art assets that he was willing to share with me, editorial help. So it's been a lot of, and then obviously running the Kickstarter, he's done, I want to say a dozen or so of these already. And so he really knew his way around. And when he sort of pegged when we ought launch and how much we ought to run it for, I'm like, you're the expert. I've never done one of these before. And expert he is. We hit the goal in a week. That gives us some time to think about stretch goals, push for those. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic to see. Happened just today. We launched a week ago today and we hit our funding goal today.
Well, I will say I saw it was really close and I thought, I'm going to give this a big push. I'm going to send it out to all my friends on Facebook. And next thing I know, boom. So.
Well, don't stop. I mean, that doesn't mean don't send it out.
Oh, I should do that again?
Yeah, exactly. And then once again, near the end, when we're trying to push up to the very last of our stretch goals or what we can get at the end. One of the things that's a real advantage of having spent a couple of years on this between when my blog, which has had it in all various pieces, ended and then actually running the Kickstarter, is that it's mostly done. And so it's not one of those Kickstarters where you're going to back it and they're going to wait a year and a half for anything. We think we'll be able to turn this very quickly.
Well, I was a Game Master supporter level. I have no idea if that was.
Oh,
I'm
thank
getting
you.
The hardcover. I heard you're hardcovers getting... are a little slow coming now. How's that going to be?
I don't know anything about the print process. The only print-on-demand books I've done have been soft covers. But again, I'm working with Owen, and he's got a much better sense of this and the timing and so on. He's even put in the Kickstarter some estimates about when those might come in, and that's based on his knowledge about how long a print-on-demand hardcover takes and so on. So shipping issues can mess anything up. We've got Paizo right now, we've started the new Quest for the Frozen Flame adventure path. Volume 1 is out right now, but Volume 6, the finale of the adventure path before it, still hasn't come. So, It's flipped a little bit.
Well, I can wait. You know, I saw in there that the author would actually like sign it and do stuff if I got the hard copy. So
absolutely. You know, I'm so sort of surprised at how many people want my signature, but I'm happy to give many people my signature.
Well, I'm excited. You know, it's funny. I saw it on your blog. I read through it. A lot of people were talking about it and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I think that'd be cool. And I love bound things though. Right. You know, if I'm going to get it, I like to get the hard copy to put on my shelf, you know, with all the other stuff, and then to reference it for things, you know, and use it rather than you can run off the PDF, but I just like having hard copy. So
absolutely. Absolutely true. I feel very much. Speaking of hard copies, we recently announced that we're doing the Dead Sons hardcover compilation.
Yes. Yes.
For,
I saw that.
Starfinder. That I'm excited to see the news hit on that. That has proven to be really popular. And I think it's going to be a great idea. It's an opportunity to go back, you know, tweak just a couple of things, but mostly keep it, you know, very much as it is now. But it's fun. It's fun to see. It's fun to talk about. And people having the attitude of, oh, that was the thing that I started with way back in the day. I'm way back. There's a way back in the day for Starfinder now, apparently.
4 years?
Yeah.
Well, you said they tweaked some things. There's that big ship at the end. Did they tweak the dimensions on that? I hope you. I don't know if you remember when I blew up at how crazy the dimensions were on that.
There's that. I don't even know. I'm not exactly sure. They're not, frankly, through the changes that they're making yet. But
oh, okay.
There are.
Who should I write about that then?
You should pester Jason Keeley. Is who you should pester about that. There's a. You know, we pay attention to the forums, and so when a number of people are saying they've got a problem with Encounter X, They don't see how you get from encounter Y to encounter Z. We add, you know, can add a little more connective tissue. It's a good time to make tweaks like that. In fact, having done this for a Pathfinder hardcover compilation, it's a great time to make tweaks like that because we kind of have to relay out and recopy fit everything. Yeah. And so sometimes it's like, oh, I need to add a whole other new paragraph here. Oh, it just so happened that the transition from encounter Y to encounter Z wasn't as smooth as I wanted anyway. I can go ahead and add it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, cool. I hope they do some of that stuff. I remember, you know, some of the complaints early on, you know, were in there and were, you know, justified when we played through it. Well, that's cool. I'm excited for that, you know, to have it all in one volume. Again, you know, hopefully, you know, tying things together a little bit better, you know. And yeah, I think that'd be cool. Do you know when that comes out?
Oh, I want to say later this year, but I don't know when. October, maybe.
Okay.
I want to say maybe October. And I have no spoilers. I have no special knowledge about what the Starfinder team is doing next. But like anybody could have, I said to Jason as soon as the Dead Sons was out, I'm like, hey, if you were going to do another one, what would it be? Thinking to myself, oh, make it against the Aeon Throne. Please make it against the Aeon Throne, because that's one I wrote the first volume of that I'm really excited about. And he's like, well, we don't know. We don't have any plans. Against the Aeon Throne is really popular. I'm like, yes.
Well, cool. And that's a shorter one, though.
It's just three volumes. And I think working through a six volume one, if anything was appealing to him about doing that, it's that it would only be three volumes.
Yes, for sure. And now Dead Sons is out of print. Is that right?
It is. But there are a number of things that go into whether or not we're going to make a hardcover compilation of something. How well we think it's going to sell, frankly. And that has to do with how popular it was when it was initially out. And are we cannibalizing sales of volumes we have sitting in the warehouse already? And for Dead Sons, that answer is, well, no, not very much, because we were out of print on at least the first one and maybe the first two. I don't remember. But some of them have been out of print. So now it's going to be the way to get it, the only way to get it.
Cool. I don't suppose you know the price point on something like that.
I don't. Yeah. The website will say, because we put it up on our website.
Oh, okay. So the hardcover price will be on there.
Yep.
Well, cool. Well, you know, speaking of adventure paths and things, I'm going to be starting GMing a new adventure path here in just under 2 weeks.
That's right. Wait, before we get to starting your new one, how did the old one go? You just finished up Dawn of Flame, right?
Yes, I just finished GMing. So, you know, in our Intrepid Heroes group, we played through it, and I just finished GMing the last book for a local group, four players through it, and they did the final final adventure encounter. It was really hard. It was really hard. Yes, it's like people were dropping like flies. They had a mystic there, bringing somebody up, and you know, one of them went down to zero, came up with one hit point. It's like, you know, after spending some resolve, and it's like, okay, should I try to finish this off? I could go down again. It's like, you know, and I didn't try to intentionally make it very hard, but I used intelligent tactics on the part of the enemy.
They're intelligent foes, so yeah.
Yeah. And they really liked it. They liked it a lot. The fact that it was like clawing and fighting, you know, because it'd been really easy up till that point. They were doing pretty well. And I thought, okay, well, we'll just put them in a challenging situation with this encounter. And it was. And I actually thought it was more challenging for them than our group when we went through it with, with Jason Tondro. Yeah. And we had six characters.
We have more people. Yeah. But it's nice to see that. I think that there is generally, and I don't mean this as any sort of criticism, quite the opposite. In fact, Starfinder generally is kind of easy. I mean, as far as role-playing games go, it's you're not fighting for every victory. Pathfinder 2nd edition seems to be tuned where it's a lot closer, a lot of the battles. Starfinder lets you kind of deal with the fight and keep getting on with the story in a way that I think is great. But it's important to have the occasional fights, and a climax of an AP is exactly the place to have.
And that's what I was thinking. Fight. Yeah. And I thought, oh, we're going to get knocked out this thing pretty quick. You know, there's just two encounters. It'll be done early. Man, that last battle took almost 2 hours. So
I believe long. It.
I believe doing it. Stuff and moving and healing and doing stuff. So, but it was everybody got to use their skills though. That was kind of the neat thing. Everybody got to use everything they had, pull out all the stops, you know?
Great. So, great. Yeah. But starting a new one then you were talking
about. So that group finished up, we play every other week, and we've been kind of figuring out, okay, let's start up something new. And I wanted some advice from you. So, you know, I've never done this before, but I'm going to be running this, GMing this, and one of my players is going to be the author of one of the books. And I haven't had that experience before. Yeah. Do you have any advice for somebody GMing for the author, you know, for something like that?
Well, that's going to depend a lot on the author. I've done this before. I might have mentioned even on this podcast that I had an adventure that I wrote for an organized play campaign, the Living Greyhawk campaign.
Right.
And I snuck into a game of of an adventure that I'd written without the GM or anybody except for one friend of mine at the table knowing I had written it. Right. I wanted to see what the experience was like from somebody who didn't know I was sort of there. And, you know, he skipped big chunks and changed some stuff around. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to roll with it. Right. Yeah, this is not. Absolutely not the kind of, you know, well, you didn't do this right, and so on, so on. So it's going to depend a lot on the attitude of the individual. Okay. I think that anybody is going to try to say, any author would try to say, yes, I'd be okay with that. I think maybe there are a few of them who might think, well, I don't know. I don't know that I could keep my emotions in check when somebody is butchering the words that I put down on the page. But that's something I've had to let go a long time ago, because the process of development and then editing makes some changes, and sometimes some pretty significant ones, from the very first Adventure Path volume that I wrote. Mm-hmm. I do have to say that I have not dug deeply to reread the Planetfall, the first volume of Horizons of the Vast. So I don't really know in a lot of detail what has changed. All I've done is take a look at it for some interviews I've done. Oh, you're the author of this. Let's talk about it. I'm like, oh, I want to talk about this encounter with this undead scout. Are they okay? I check. All right. There's still an undead scout. There is still an encounter with them. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Phew. I can at least talk about that from memory without having to reread everything. There's also a sense, this one in particular is very, very open-ended in the ways it could go. And so I feel like for the first adventure, as long as I'm not being a driving decision maker on a lot of whether we go east or west or north or south,
right,
it's going to be fine, right? I do know one sort of campaign critical secret door that we are not supposed to find, and I will stay entirely quiet about that.
All right. I think I know where that one would be at this point. So if it's that. Yeah, I've kind of read through it. And just for so folks know, I'm going to be run book one, Horizons of the Vast, Planetfall, written by Ron Lundeen with
that's
my
me. That's why we're talking about group. This. Yeah. Yes.
Just to be clear, you know, you know, one of the things about this book is I hear that this is Kingmaker in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how we've kind of built it.
I've never played Kingmaker. I don't know what that means. So can you tell me?
Kingmaker. Well, first of all, oh boy, you're missing out, but you'll have a great opportunity coming because Kingmaker has been one of Paizo's best-selling, most popular Pathfinder first edition adventure paths, much so that we're updating and recompiling that into a second edition adventure path. But the thing that is really neat about it is the whole campaign is sort of built on you're given a charter to rule this particular region, go out and rule it. You've got to go explore all the different sort of spaces, the nooks and crannies on a big hex map. All right, well, turns out there's this village here and they don't want anybody to be in charge. How do you smooth that over? Or, oh, there's a whole den of trolls here that you've got to do something with. And that something with could be exterminate the den of trolls, or it might be negotiate with the den of trolls and bring them into your kingdom and things like that. So the fact that it's really open-ended is when people talk about it's Kingmaker, that's what they mean. They mean it is very much more of a sandbox than anything else. Okay. It is possible to get yourself in some trouble. The Kingmaker sort of tries to mitigate that by saying, all right, well, you're given this much of a charter on this map, and then in the next adventure, you're given this additional amount, and in the third adventure, go off to the east, you're supposed to explore this way. And I believe Horizons of the Vast does something like that. But it's when I was running Kingmaker, I had a very long-running, very fun Kingmaker campaign. The players did just that. They kind of went off the edge of the map for something at near the end of the first adventure that put them into Adventure 3, right? So three or four levels higher than they were supposed to be. And one of the first things they ran into was a wandering monster that was just random. I just randomly rolled it, and it happened to not be very tough for that adventure, but meant it was pretty tough for the players, but they managed it. They got through. And unfortunately, the fact that they got through it led them to believe, oh, it's fine if we go this way.
Right.
The things we encounter are totally handleable by us. And they were not. The very next thing they ran into convinced them, well, maybe we come back and don't go this way. It was something substantially tougher, and then a big river. And they're like, we're going to call this river the edge of where we care to go for the time being. And I'm looking at the map in book three and seeing what's on the other side of the river and silently applauding that decision of theirs. But the fact that you can get into that kind of trouble even is really what makes us very open sandbox game what it is. And, well, yeah, the intent is that this is that same way.
Yeah, that makes sense now. You know, I've read through actually the first three books because I'm going to be running the whole shoot match. And I'll go back and review the first book a little bit more closely. And that makes a lot of sense in terms of the setup. You know, it actually starts with, one of the pre AP things you're supposed to do, the players are, is actually craft your charter, the first four sections. And so, you know, I gave out to our team, the players, kind of the charter guidelines and said, hey, you got to make some decisions even before we get started, do the first four things. And so I can see how it, you know, you're kind of building out the charter to kind of lay the groundwork for what type of thing you're going to do. And then the adventure seems to be set up with, okay, here's some set things that they should encounter in certain areas. And then here's a whole bunch of things that may happen if they go in certain areas or may not. And, you know, kind of trying to drive them to some conclusion at the end, but they can go roundabout or they can go directly to it, depending on the choices they make. And then that final thing, whatever it is, where I guess that secret door might be, is the thing that then helps propel them to the next book is kind of the sense I get for that.
Right. And it's going to require these kinds of sandbox campaigns require substantially more page flipping on the part of the GM. So mm-hmm. you're going to find mm-hmm. that a lot. It's going to be, all right, well, from our perspective as players, we're just walking from this hex right. to the next hex over. And then you're like, oh, well, now I have to flip 12 pages ahead. And then, you know, oh, we go back to town. Well, now I got to flip 20 pages back to say what happens there. There's only so much linearity you can do when you're presenting an adventure like that. And the thing mm-hmm. that ends up almost making more sense is, hey, just lay out all the options on a map and then do them like you would a book, right? They just go, you know, A through Z, left, right, top to bottom. And mm-hmm. if somebody, you know, walks from Q over to D, well, that's going to be some page flipping. But
yeah, you know, I haven't really thought how I was going to do that part. I mean, it comes with a hex grid map and it has, you know, here's a bunch of different letters on it and things happen on my end. My intention was actually to give a blank map to the players, right, with no letters.
Great idea.
And so when they go to a place, they kind of keep track of what happened there to them. And, you know, so, you know, I haven't really, because I haven't done this. I've done more like homebrew campaigns where you're kind of, they can do whatever. You kind of build a lot of the world as they go along, right? So this is kind of new for me in terms of an adventure path. So I'm thankful for the insight from Kingmaker. I do have some questions for you concerning the charter. That's kind of the first thing that gets started. What's your familiarity with
charters? Hardly any. I knew when I was assigned this, I knew that we would be doing it. And I had sort of an initial draft that the developer gave me and said, this is kind of what we're thinking about. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, well, mm-hmm. I can see that your charter has statistics that are these different values and maybe decisions you make in the first adventure kind of adjust those, but how, whether it means adjusting something from 1 point to 3 points or whether it means adjusting something from 4 points to 9 points. I mean, I didn't have a very good sense of the scale. Mm-hmm. I probably should have looked at the sort of the draft rules of the charter more closely, but when you're writing an adventure on a tight timetable, there's something to be said for picking your battles. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to learn all this, do it exactly the matching way, only to have to unlearn it and then undo it when final rules are out. The developer's going to have to develop it anyway. And I feel like I was upfront with my developer about that. But it mm-hmm. means that as a result, I don't have a good sense of what the charter system is, except that I know it draws a lot from Kingmaker. So you got different stats of your nation / charter in this one. And the decisions that you make about what you build are going to raise or lower some of those. So early on you kind of pick what do we feel like is going to be the best. And then then random events happen, which have the possibility of raising, but usually lowering those unless you mitigate them in some way. That was sort of the overall kingdom turn in Kingmaker. Mm-hmm. And I expect that's going to be similar here. I have a lot of confidence in Jason Keeley, who is very analytical, very, very much board game minded. Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of puzzle hunts and puzzle competitions with him, and he's just a mm-hmm. master at this. So I feel like we won't end up with a lot of graveyards and dumps in Kingmaker. One of the things that people who played that realized that if you have your cities that you're building and you fill your cities with graveyards and or dumps, that is the most mechanically efficient way to crank certain values for your kingdom up. So what terrible cities must they look like to be filled from one end to the other with graveyards and dumps? But mechanically, you've got a lot of pluses. So,
yeah, you know, again, having not played Kingmaker, I'm thinking more. You know, I played a video game a long time ago called Reach for the Stars.
Okay,
where basically you're developing planets and you're looking for planets. In this case, I'll say charter regions, which is a 10th here, a charter is 10,000 square miles, right? So it's really big space, mm-hmm. right? But in Reach for the Stars, it was a planet, had certain basic starting values, and then you would kind of feed material into it to raise different values, and that enabled you to build new things and so mm-hmm. on and so forth. Similar like Command and Conquer, if you ever played that.
I have, game. Yep.
Yeah, so where you have to meet certain criteria to build the next thing, the next thing, the next thing to output stuff. And so that's the sense I'm getting here. I haven't looked through all the tables and memorized all this, obviously. But depending on certain things that you start off with, like the type of focus you have, for example, for your charter, that gives mm-hmm. you some starting values. And then the actions you decide to take can help build up other starting values, which gives you the ability to build other sort of infrastructure right in your city or your settlement that you start growing.
Right.
So that's a big part of it, which I think is really cool. Kind of like the sim city part of it, you know? But also there's a lot of exploration too, you know? So your open world exploration, checking things out, encountering other charters, having to deal with them either through diplomacy or through non-diplomatic means. Right. Then the native creatures in here. And then there's a big mystery underlying the whole thing, which you know the answer to, I'm betting.
Well, I know how to set up the mystery, and I know kind of I know in very broad strokes what the big mystery is.
Oh, okay.
Because that was part of the outline.
Oh yeah,
after I turned my adventure in, there were five more full adventures,
right,
where this mystery unfolds, and I don't know any of those.
Right.
So,
right.
It is also one of the things that keeps you kind of excluded from a lot of the adventure path when your role as the author is the first one, is that it is possible as the work gets done and as things roll in that the developer has pivots in mind for how, mm-hmm. oh, well, if we mm-hmm. change this in Adventure 2, then it changes how we do this thing in Adventure 5. Let me just talk to those authors and make it work, right? So even if the broad strokes of the story are pretty unlikely to change, there can be other aspects of the story that change sometimes pretty dramatically, and I'm already done, right? I've written my thing, I've turned it in, and sort of that's that. So there's a lot of those sort of a lot of changes that I certainly wouldn't see coming and didn't have a need to see coming in the first place, because my focus was entirely on setting up a mystery, and then mm-hmm. we'll see what happens when other people take the mystery, run with it, and then solve it. So I will be, you will find that My knowledge through Adventure 1 is not super high, but man, it drops right off a cliff once we're done with Adventure 1. And I'm not going to know anything going on.
Well, what's your feeling going into this? Are you excited to see how it turned out? Or are you just like, oh, this is what we picked, that's fine? Or
no, I am. One of the things that I know changed when I talked about how for some of the interviews that I did for this, I'm like, oh, well, before I open my big mouth about X, I ought to see if it's still in the adventure. Mm-hmm. And there's one thing that's not. I had like this whole sort of subplot going on that seems to have been nixed entirely and replaced with something else. And the something else I didn't quite grok because I wasn't reading the thing cover to cover, but it's different.
Right.
And so I'm going to know not to be, I'm excited to see what happens because I want to see what development did to this. And there's a, there's a real sense about product development at Paizo. The thing I've said for a long time is we'll raise stuff a letter grade, right? If you give me a C quality turnover, I'm going to turn it into a B. If you give me a B quality turnover, I'm going to turn it into an A. So I think even if I turned in, you know, B quality work, I'm going to be able to play an A quality adventure. That's great.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of neat. You know, we haven't started an AP for a long time. Well, no, we have. We were starting the Devastation arc with Intrepid Heroes.
Starting at 13th level than first level. Is. And if only there were an entire digital divination episode about that subject.
Yes. You know, but I was just thinking, you know, we're all starting brand new again. And it's so wide open, and so many players are picking a lot of the new stuff. Like, I'm hearing that you're going to be doing a precog.
Oh, I do want to do a precog because we talked all about Galactic Magic and I got really excited about it. One of the things that I think is not only is the precogs a really interesting class, I think, for a lot of the abilities they have and the options they have, But sort of in game, to the extent I have any sort of sudden flash of insight in volume one about, you know, oh, wait, maybe we don't attack these things. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's, well, obviously that's because I'm a precog, not because I'm the author of the volume with some inside knowledge. So I'm hoping I can kind of hand wave those, pass those off kind of as being part of being a precog. But. But I do want to be a spellcaster. I feel like Galactic Magic really reinvigorated spellcasting in the setting. And I will, as I have said that I would for just about any of these, I would like to pester my GM to encourage the scaling cantrips option in the campaign.
I'm fine with that. I think that's an optional rule that should be in there. So.
Okay.
And especially having seen in second edition how scaling cantrips work, I think that's super. You know, I'm hoping that we get something similar as a result. So that's the one thing I'm curious. You know, when I mentioned a lot of people are playing different stuff, you know, you're playing a precog. Mm-hmm. Have somebody else playing a nanocyte, which I haven't seen extensively being played through. Have somebody playing a wisdom-based biohacker, which I actually haven't seen. I've seen some, but not extensively played through. And my favorite is what our friend Scott, I think, is going to play. That is.
Oh, is it some new rules from a from something very exciting by a author who's excited to see his stuff out being played in the world?
Yes. Yeah, he was saying, oh, you know, the only frontliner we got is this nanocyte. You know, we need another damage dealer. And I said, oh, you could play an archer. You could play an archer. Oh, and he said, I used to always play Rangers and stuff before. Let me think about that. And so I'm hoping he gives it a go because I'd like to see it in action. You know, I'm hoping to play one, but to see somebody else go through a lot of that, see how it works, what doesn't work, and see if he likes it or not. Hopefully he's excited as I am. I don't know. So.
Well, see, that's one of the things that's really exciting about a lot of the Starfinder classes, right? If you've got a nanocyte and a precog in your game, like it sounds like you're going to, that is probably entirely unlike some other GM's nanocyte and precog. There's so many different ways you can go with those characters that they're not sort of used up once you've seen them played once. So that's really neat.
Yeah, so I'm excited to get it started. I got to start prepping for it. You know, when I was finishing up Dawn of Flame, you know, literally we had just finished that book when I took over running the book for the other group. Mm-hmm. So it was really fresh in my mind. And, you know, the biggest thing I noticed is how hard Jason Tondra made it on us versus what was in the book.
Which we came through the other side, okay, but
it was great.
So it's not unduly hard, but boy, it was it. It did feel like that difficulty ramped way up from the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, and so what I've learned from that, and also having finished, running Book Six myself, is how much fun it is when it's super difficult for players. And so rather than wait till the end, I'm just going to start it in Book One, Level One. You know, have a couple party wipes and give everybody that opportunity to experience that frustration and difficulty.
Great.
Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
No. I do have to look. I want to look at the charter rules. One of the things that I'm this kind of player, I'll warn you, right? Rather than go through the charter rules and think about what is going to give us the most, you know, maximums that we can get, maximize our maximum. Yeah. I remember seeing that one of the options that you can build is a space elevator.
Yes.
You know, the big, to haul stuff into and out of orbit. Those are really cool. And so I'm almost certain to be, okay, what does it take for us to build a space elevator? And then how do I make recommendations that our charter go in such a way as to have us build a space elevator? And whatever time we get around to building that space elevator, I'm going to have won my little mental mini game and be like, yes, I've got a place with a space elevator. And that's really kind of what I was going for.
And even in the charter rules themselves, there's a space elevator piece of art in them. So
that'll be our space elevator. They've illustrated our space elevator. Yeah. Sweet.
I haven't read through the whole thing. I don't know at the end what the big benefit is of it. I imagine it's more efficient building a spaceport and stuff like that for your settlement, you know, seems like it, but I have no idea. I haven't gotten to book six yet. So, but yeah, that's kind of cool. I'm hoping that this extra layer of administration, because I'm going to try to put a bunch of this on the players, tracking mm-hmm. what they're doing and stuff. I hope that doesn't prove to be burdensome, where it takes away some of the fun of, we're just going to go in there and, you know, kill stuff kind of thing.
Well, I will tell you, from my experience with Kingmaker, and I've heard this for another couple of people, so it's an anecdote, and I'm aware the plural of anecdote is not anecdata, so it's not data, but in my table, whenever we did the Kingdom turns, about mm-hmm. half the table was really into them and wanted to make a lot of detailed decisions, and the other half of the table just kind of checked out. They were waiting for the Kingdom turn to be over so they could get back to the adventuring. Right, and what right. it meant was, to the extent there was anything that was like super detail oriented, there was sort of an impetus to, you know what, just make a decision and go, right? You feel like upgrading this church to a cathedral? Great, upgrade it. Let's go. Be done. Or, you know, let's do this at the end of a session and take some time to think about it or whatever. Oh, so like that is that is totally mitigatable. It's manageable. I'm one of the people who will be excited about the charter rules system, right? And helping to run that. There's always one player that's the one who's like, I'm gonna be the one to build the starship. Let me get everybody else's input. And, you know, what do you feel like you want to do on the starship? Is there any upgrades that you want to make that easier, et cetera? But there's like one starship builder player. I found, but I think the charter system involves so many people doing things, picking your role for what you do. Right. It's not going to be, you know, ruler and executioner and, you know, so on like it was in Kingmaker, but there's going to be, but there are roles that you take.
Yeah.
And everybody in certain roles has to make checks for things. And so being able to, that kind of keeps everybody at least interested in what's going on, because they've got a space in it. And so that's helpful. How many players are we going to have? Do you know? Is it going to be another party of six?
I think it's going to be six, though. One of them, he just got a work change. And so it's like, he's now, he got promoted. Now he fills in when somebody else is missing, which means
much harder to regularly schedule things. Yeah that so can totally happen.
Might be like in every other kind of thing for them. Okay. The nice thing about it, I'll say, about this entire group, in which you've met Scott only, right? You haven't met any of the other players.
I haven't met any of the others, yeah.
Yeah, is that they are not just like murder hobos. They're just not all about going and killing stuff. They're actually really like to figure out stuff. They're, you know, I was... when I was running this last book, I realized, man, they're spending an hour figuring out something that a lot of groups, like 5 minutes, let's go.
Yeah. <know?
laughs> And it's like, okay, yeah, this is not going to go as fast as I thought. But then when they do Murder Hobo, they're really efficient at it, though. That's the other thing, is a couple of them are just, you're going to meet Erin, and she just makes just crazy synergistic builds. And I won't say min-maxing, but more, she really finds synergies between things. And in this case, she's going to make, you know, I was commenting, you know, we don't really have a healer. We don't have a mystic or a envoy. Now, the Precarch has some condition removal and things like that in terms of
in their spellbook. And the biohacker does too.
Yeah, pardon me?
And the biohacker would too.
Right. And so that's what she was saying, is, well, I'm building my biohacker so it can actually do some healing and some stamina healing. So basically to help cover some of that as well. So, so it'll be interesting. You know, I think this is a group that likes to work together with each other in terms of covering what's needed and things like that, which is why I was kind of prompting people to kind of say what you want to run. And we actually talked about it some after the meeting, but you weren't available because you were visiting friends and things.
Right.
So I think that'll be good. Our session, our first session, will probably be some session zero around nailing down our first level characters a little bit. Hopefully we'll have the charter, the first four steps ironed out, but maybe we'll talk about that a little bit. Okay. And then we'll probably kind of get started. Now, we're doing it face-to-face, and so you know, we'll have a big chunk of time, and it's at my house, so we can stay late if we want. I don't have to go anywhere, so I don't care. So we might get a full blown a session in, just depending on how.
Session zero and one, maybe.
Right, right. Depending on what people are feeling like. I'd like to get as much done as we can pre-session zero stuff taken care of early so we can get into the meat of playing and doing things. That's always fun. Everybody's excited to get into it. But, you know, whatever it takes to do it.
Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect. I'm really looking forward to it. I think that it's going to be, it's great to meet new, it's always great to meet new gamers, right? And anybody that comes recommended by you is somebody worth spending my time playing with. I really like that. So,
all right. I'm going to tell them on their be on their best behavior now after that. I don't know.
Or not, or the opposite, maybe. I don't know. That's
well, they're pretty much hard to control too. So, you know, it doesn't matter what I really say to them. All right. Well, I look forward to, in hopefully, I think our next episode, whatever number that is, will be after we've given this a start. So maybe
we can sort of talk about that. The experiences about starting a new campaign is something that's always, always interesting for anybody to hear who's got their own campaigns they have either started or participated in, because they never go the same way. Yeah. And so that could be a lot of, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. At least we'll touch on it anyway.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.